Hello and welcome back to episode 27 of the Red Sox On Deck podcast. I'm your host, Bob Osgood, and joining me this week after 1 week hiatus, we've got Shelley Verstraete back. Shelley, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. You know, the Red Sox are still kind of like competing here. The minors system that we're about to look into this week is you know, looking pretty good. Yeah, but I'm doing fine. How are you doing, Bob?
I'm doing well. I absolutely love this time of year, you know, mixing in a little bit of football, but still focusing 95% on baseball, just with so much going on every day. It's hard to keep track of, but you're right. I mean, there's nothing better than playing important games in September, and whether they Red Sox make the playoffs or they don't, or they get into a one-game wild card, it's just good to have big games. And each of these, you know, I'm trying to keep my eyes open at 11 o'clock midnight on the West Coast. That doesn't always work out, but just they're all somehow you look at those standings and it's Tampa Bay and then three teams that are eight games back. Identical records, essentially, with the Sox having played two more games, and then Baltimore is about 78 and a half back or somewhere close to that. So just fascinating look at the standings. You don't see that very often, a three-way tie with teams all in the same division. And I don't know, you have to think that that series that starts a week from Friday, that's going to be at Fenway, three games against the Yankees, one way or another is going to decide how this all falls.
Yeah. I mean, I totally agree. I mean, I really wish that we had some of the, you know, I really wish that we would, you know, face the Baltimore Orioles a little bit more down the stretch. But it's going to be fun no matter, you know, no matter who we face. It's extremely exciting.
Yeah, well, we're going to be seeing Baltimore again soon, fortunately. So we can mix some of those in, mix some interleague games in. It's going to be interesting. Not often that you get, I think they have five interleague games the last couple weeks of the season, which is, I don't know, not really the scheduling that I would have preferred. I'd like to see all division games. We do see a good amount of division games down the stretch, so I think I'm glad they're not playing Toronto anymore. They're absolutely terrifying right now. Seeing 11 runs in one inning and 18 another day, and it's just, I don't know. I have a feeling that that wild card game might be in Canada, depending on who plays them, so we'll see. Going to get into some MLB transactions, some minor league news, some minor league performances from the past week or two. We thank Keaton for stepping in last week, and we talked about some minor league performances with him. A couple players that we referenced with him have kind of had some updates from there, but we're also going to talk about a few players that haven't come up in a couple of months that are pretty exciting and have had some exciting performances recently, and some not so exciting performances recently. So starting things off, just some maintenance and reminders. If you can leave us a 5-star rating and review, if you enjoy the show or if you enjoy any of the Over the Monster podcasts, please do that on whichever platform you listen to. We have this show, the On Deck podcast. We have the Over the Monster pod with Matt Collins and Brian Joyner, the Red Seat with Jake Devereaux and Keaton DeRocher, and the Precap that Shelley does along with Keaton. Starting off with some transactions and debuts that have happened over the last week. Connor Siebold on the 11th was called up for the first time. And he had over two levels in the minors earlier in the season, been 2-3 with a 3.61 ERA, had 56 strikeouts and 47 innings, and notably had had a couple of really excellent outings that we talked about last week, and I think we talked about the week before, wondering when we might see him. And really it was it didn't really fit in terms of him being called up before last week because he had thrown the day before a couple of different COVID outbreaks that they had had. But I don't know, Shelley, did you have any thoughts on Connor Siebold's debut? He threw three innings, gave up three hits, two runs, had two walks, didn't strike out any batters, but held his own. He was given a short leash against a tough Chicago White Sox lineup.
Yeah, I mean, I really felt bad for him. Like, that was his major league debut against the White Sox, who has an absolutely lethal lineup. But yeah, he, like you said, he held his own. Sadly, he didn't strike anyone out, but he really limited the hits and everything like that. He went three innings. That is a totally fine, you know, debut for a guy like Connor Siebold. I'm really excited to see what he does. If he gets any more run, like, in the late in the season, I'm excited to watch. I don't know if he will, because a lot of guys are coming back from the COVID IL, but just knowing how much time that he missed from injury and then just building back up, this start against some type of lineup like the White Sox, I thought it was okay. I was not displeased.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, he really didn't he only threw 43 pitches, so it was hard to totally evaluate. And he didn't have a strikeout, but there was a pitch late in the third inning where he threw absolutely beautiful, I think it was a changeup on the inner half that was just the perfect pitch. Got the lower half of the strike zone and the ump didn't call it. And it was just, it seemed like robbery to me that he had to go home without his first career strikeout when he made a perfect pitch. Actually ended up getting out of it with a double play later that at bat. And I thought that they would give him another inning, especially with how short they were, but probably Cora was happy with getting three innings out of him and just kind of going with that. It was all of those, each of the six games on the road in Chicago and Seattle were so many one-run games and walk-offs and extra innings, and it was just, I don't know. I mean, that was, I think Cora really enjoys that. I think he loves managing in these late-season games where he has to decide, you know, moves on the fly, pinch hitting, which reliever he's going to bring in when. I mean, be interested to see if he starts pulling what he did in the playoffs a few years ago and uses starters in relief on their off day if it gets to like a must-win situation. So it's been interesting to watch that. But I mean, you see the same thing with Hauk yesterday. It was the, as soon as they got to that 19th batter, that first batter the third time through the order, he was out of the dugout in the fifth inning. So I wasn't too shocked to see a short leash with Siebold. The only thing that worried me a little bit, looking at his Baseball Savant page's average fastball was 90.5 miles per hour, and I know that he has frequently been in the mid-90s, so I hope that, you know, that's just kind of a coming back after some injuries, and with the short season last year, you wonder if some arms are starting to break down a little bit, but 90.5 in the fastball didn't really seem like what I was hoping to see from Siebold, but I thought some of his secondary stuff was pretty decent. So, like you said, overall, I think it was fine. He looked like he at least belonged there. Moving on, the other debut, not a whole lot to talk about, is with Caleb Ort, who was 29 years old, and we'd mentioned him earlier in the year. As I don't have the exact stats in front of me, but I know that he had at least 10 outings of shutout ball early in the season and had quite a few saves and seemed like a possibility when they needed an arm, but he wasn't on the 40 man. He ended up getting called up, just faced a couple of batters, had a hit and a walk and got one out, but was throwing about 96 miles an hour on his fastball with an 84 mile an hour slider, and not a whole lot to take away, but just wanted to note that that Ort did make his debut as well. And in terms of a major league transaction coming up, we have Chris Sale coming back from the COVID IL. That is anticipated. We don't know 100%, but on Friday, hoping to see him make his return. I don't know, Shelly, how much you've kind of looked at, have seen quite a bit of people looking ahead at the schedule, especially since we're in the last, 17, 18 days. And there are several off days. I think that there's three or four off days over the next 2 weeks. How do you think they'll handle Chris Sale? Do you think they might try to go for those four starts in the remaining 14 games, or do you think they'll kind of continue to handle him with kid gloves as they have, giving him an extra day every chance that they get?
This is honestly, when you put this question on the pre-row, this is like a really difficult question. Honestly, I think it depends on how the games go and like his first couple starts, because if we're still competitive, if we're still in you know wild card contention, whatever, I do think that the Red Sox are gonna try to get as many Chris Sale starts as they can. However, if you know Toronto is just going gangbusters like they have been for the last couple weeks, And it's kind of looking a little bit murky. I could see the Red Sox maybe playing some games with Chris Sale's any limits when he starts. But, I mean, if I was in the front office, I'd be just be like, Chris Sale, you just go because yeah. we need you. So.
There is a path to have Eovaldi and Sale start 8 of the last 16 games of the season. And that started with Eovaldi's start the other day. Now, it sounds crazy, right? Having the two of them start 50% of the games, you're basically going with a four-man rotation. But then when you look at it on the schedule, they would all have... You're not starting anyone on short rest. And in fact, one of those Sale starts would be on 5 days rest. So it'd be 4 days rest, 5 days rest, 4 days rest. And that would line them up to start the last day of the season if they needed that game. And if, you know, fortunately they had clinched by then he could pitch in the wild card game 2 days later. And like I said, none of them on short rest. I feel like, especially with the extra week that he just got unexpectedly, that they might try to do that with some shorter pitch counts, maybe give him 75 to 80 pitches, but try to get him through five innings on some of those 4 days rest games. I feel like the reason that they have been so tentative with him is to have some stretches like this towards the end. And I'm sure that they would need to throw him on 4 days rest a little bit in October. So I don't know. Maybe this is wishful thinking, but I think they might give it a shot. I feel like there's a better chance than not at this point, you know, just kind of going all in on this last really just two and a half weeks that are left. So side note, Nate Eovaldi's stats, the last seven starts, 1.90 ERA, which is the best seven start span that he has had in any season in his career. He's just been awesome. So it would be really cool if Eovaldi and Sale kind of put the team on their back and they get so many of these COVID players back from the IL. And I want to see Christian Arroyo up there in a big spot again. It's been so long since he's been healthy, and then he got COVID as soon as he came back. So a lot of players and that are coming back, and it seems like, knock on wood, hopefully that the worst is over here. I mean, more than half the team's had it at this point, so who else can get it? And hopefully they've gotten everything out of there. So I don't know. I'm sure we could easily see another outbreak this weekend, but hoping that the worst is behind us here and that we can see those pitchers lead the Sox to a playoff berth. All right, looking at some minor league news, I wanted to talk a little bit. We mentioned it back in, I think it was early July, when they decided they were going to actually have a couple of different levels with playoffs and kind of what the format is and which teams are still alive and just go through those teams. Because we haven't really looked in the big picture. We've talked about players a lot. We haven't looked at these teams. Shelley, looking at the records up and down the minor leagues system with the Red Sox this year, a lot of teams with 12, 15, 20 games over 500, a lot different than 2 years ago. And I think that kind of speaks to the depth of the system and just that they're playing competitive games late in the season, just like their big league club is, to try to get into some of these playoffs in the levels that do have playoffs.
And honestly, just looking at the records of just at each individual level, knowing that we are competitive, and maybe trying to get into like some of these like weird playoffs, it's extremely encouraging to see. Because when, you know, in different type of regimes, and different types of just different types of regimes. Like, we never really saw a lot of productive minor league teams. And just seeing as you could just go up and down and you see where we're competitive wherever, we haven't really seen that in a while.
Yeah, and if you're winning at each of those levels coming up through the system, then you're in some winning atmospheres, and you know, that continues as you move further up, to go into that detail, you know, the only leagues that are really going beyond this week with the regular season are the AAA and the Dominican Summer League. Worcester at AAA is 65-49. They're 5 games back of Buffalo. So they have 2 more weeks beyond this week. There isn't actually a playoff. So they just kind of crown whoever has the best record. But that goes into the first week of October. So again, 5 games back, unlikely unless they went on a crazy run to get to first, but a really good record and interesting because players have moved all around with Worcester, especially everyone getting called up. I mean, the AAA team was at Boston for about 2 weeks there. Exactly. went to a game in Worcester and none of the Worcester players were there. So below that, AA Portland, they're 64-46. Really good record, but unlikely to make the playoffs. The magic number is down to 1. Nearly impossible for them to get into the top 2. So, to explain, in AA, High A, and Low A, it's just the top 2 that are going to play a 5-game championship series that would start next week. So Portland was in the mix going into this week, but despite, you know, that long winning streak that they had last month, that got them to this 18 games over 500, you know, an excellent season, but not quite going to get into that top 2. Greenville isn't going to get into the top 2 either, but they were 64-52. Very good season, and they've had a lot of promotions recently coming up from Salem, so they've got an exciting team down there. A ton of players to watch in the last couple of weeks down in Greenville. Salem, 70-46, same kind of thing. Just really interesting team to watch, and they've had some of their first-year player draft, you know, minor league players that have been called up from the short season, rookie league type of ball. So looks like they're hoping to get one more week out of this as they have a 1-game lead with 4 games remaining. The top 2 make the finals there. They're 1 game ahead of Down East, which is the 3rd place team, and they're a few games behind Charleston, which is the 1 seed. So if Salem can hold off Down East, they would play a 5-game series that would start next week. It would start next Tuesday, where the 2 seed actually gets the first 2 games at home, so those games would be at Salem on Tuesday and Wednesday, and then over the weekend they would travel to the 1 seed, who would get 3 games at home Friday, Saturday, Sunday, which would be Charleston, as I mentioned. So that would be cool if we could get one team into a playoff series down there. Like I said, 70-46, really good record. The Complex League ends this week. The Red Sox had a 36-19 record at that level. And then the Dominican Summer League, which started a little later than everything else, has a couple of more weeks. They have 2 teams down there, the Red and the Blue. The Red is 24-21, Blue is 30-16. So, you know, just think it's, like we said, interesting that they have good records and that they might have a team make the playoffs with Salem to be in a championship series. Article that I want to talk about a little bit, it was in The Athletic, and we'll link it in the show notes, about Durbin Feltman. And Feltman is a player that I think we all had really high hopes for, and this article really talked about that, that I think Feltman really, you know, understood the pressure that was on him. People talking about him possibly making the league in the first year, helping their bullpen out, or possibly making the team out of spring training in the second year, and was a bit of a disappointment. And this article was interesting in that it chronicled, you know, in quarantine, how he took a step back and was able to get away from all of that chaos at the beginning of his career and those expectations that really didn't come to fruition. Talked about how he rebuilt his delivery and rebooted his career with that. And I think early this season had some rough patches, pitching in games for the first time in 2 years. But now that he's been promoted to Worcester after really what was a dominant month and a half at AA, he's had a 2.25 ERA and a 0.90 whip with a 5-1 strikeout to walk ratio down in Worcester. So Shelley, I don't know if you were able to look at that a little bit, but just generally it seems like he put a lot of pressure on himself and there was a lot of hype. And are you still a believer in Feltman long term being a contributor with the big league squad?
Yeah, I really am. I mean, I was all on the Feltman, you know, hype train after he was drafted. You know, I just thought that, just like that article said, just has everyone has thought, that I felt that he was just going to be just on the major league squad extremely quickly. But, you know, he dealt with some basically just walk issues, in my opinion. Like, it just wasn't really going well. But this year, he has looked so good. So, yeah, I am all aboard the Durbin Feltman train. Going into next year, I don't think that he's going to get the call this year, but yeah, I think that he has a good chance to contribute next year in the bullpen.
Yeah, he's one of those guys that had helium early on and then hasn't, and then you realize he's only 24. You know, he was a college arm, but he was drafted in 2018. So 2018, 2019, 2021, this is only the third year that he's pitched in the minors and gone through each of the four levels, and now he's at AAA and, you know, striking out 9.5 per nine, and as you said, with the walk issues, which were a real issue, you know, a season at AA over 43 games, he walked almost, or 5.5 guys per nine. That's down to 1.8 since he's gotten a AAA. He's kept the home run rate down to less than a home run per nine. And just seems like with a new delivery and a new mindset that, you know, he still, as he says in the article, thinks he can do very big things in the league. And, you know, I am just with a lot of arms that we've talked about this year. We haven't talked about Feltman a whole lot, but he's there and he's pitching well and has a 60 grade fastball potentially on at least that Fangraphs has, and a 55 slider and a curveball that's 45-50. So he has pitches and out pitches with the slider. It would be good to see, like you said, not this year, but maybe next year, another name to keep in mind that we talked about a lot early on and, you know, fell off a little bit, but is back on our radar. The Baseball America top 100 update came out last week, and it was interesting to see where some of the Red Sox players are. Tristan Cassius at number 15, really taking a leap for them. Marcelo Meyer debuting at 29. Jaron Duran is at 37, and Nick York at 64. And kind of talking about the Baseball America one, but also our friends from Sox Prospects released their September rankings, and they actually put Nick York ahead of Jaron Duran. So what did you think of these rankings, and do you think that Duran and York are kind of bridging the gap, or is that just a bigger conversation for another day that's way more complicated, Shelley?
I was very surprised that Sox Prospects totally put York above Duran. I mean, I get it, because I mean, Duran, you know, he had a little bit of a run and he really, really struggled. Like, he looked really bad. They, you know, they weren't using him against lefties, so it's like, does the team really trust him? Da 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 da. And York has just been, outside of, like, he scuffled at the beginning of the year, but then he's just been going gangbusters ever since, right?
Yep.
So I thought that was that meant a lot to me. I'm like, okay, maybe I really need to buy in more to what he is doing, just because, yeah, I want him to be just amazing. You know, he's extremely young for every single level that he has ever been at, and he's just keep on hitting. He just keeps hitting, and it's just like,
Oh, I'm sorry to cut you off.
No, you go ahead.
I was gonna say, we talked with Keaton last week, but it's worth bringing up again. He had 6 out of 9 games with 2 hits or more going into last week's episode, and had a game-winning grand slam on one of the games that he didn't have multi-hit. This is Nick York, and that's after getting promoted, and that's after getting promoted at 19 years old to high A, which is just crazy young. You know, very few in the whole league that are that young. It'd be interesting to see how young he is compared to the rest of high A. And yeah, I mean, he's had a couple of higher strikeout games this week, but it probably is the first 3-game stretch that he hasn't dominated in like 2 or 3 months. it was that 4 months in Salem, so I get it. I mean, he's 19 and Duran's 25, And, you know, it's probably an upside thing. And it's probably the power that we're seeing this year that we weren't sure if he was going to be, you know, a gap hitter with a little bit of power. But then you see 470-foot home runs from him. You say, oh, he's got that in his game too. I totally get it. You know, I can understand. I think they're kind of right next to each other with Cassius and Meyer probably a step up from that, right next to each other. But, you know, stuff changes every month, and that's what's interesting about debating these different things. So I get it for sure.
Yep.
All right. Some minor league performances from the past week or two. We'll kind of fire through a few of these, and then we're going to finish up spotlighting a player from rookie ball that each of us wanted to spotlight this week. Jay Groom, who we talked about last week, since his Portland promotion, he has now had another excellent performance. Took a no-hitter into the sixth inning on Saturday night. He's now fired 11 scoreless innings over his first two starts with 19 strikeouts and only one walk in those 11 innings. It was interesting talking to Keaton because I think that, you know, he still is tempering expectations with Groom, and overall kind of has been a little bit disappointed in the season, which it was good to hear kind of a differing view about that. And if you look at his overall ERA, that's in the, I think it was in the high fives going into his last start, you can definitely see that side of things. But over the last two or three months with the promotion, handling the promotion so well, I really feel that he knows that this is do or die time for him and that they're giving him a promotion despite a higher ERA to see exactly what they have, and he's really answered the bell so far.
Yeah, I was encouraged to see the Red Sox actually promote him because, you know, he needs to be added to the 40-man this offseason. So going into the season, I didn't think that Groom was actually going to be added because there's been so many injuries and just everything that has really hampered his stats and his everything. But the dude has totally proved me wrong. Yeah, Jay Groom needs to be added to the 40-man this offseason, and he has been absolutely killing it this year, and it's I've just been very impressed with what he's doing.
Yeah, and I think that they would be probably leaning towards that now, and especially with the 12th pick overall, and they've really put a lot into things with him. His ERA is now down to 4.66 after two outstanding starts in a row, and has 127 strikeouts over 93 innings. And he hasn't, I mean, I think that's more, I can take a look at it, but that is more innings by far than he had thrown at every level, plus he had the surgery mixed in. So it's good to see that he isn't breaking down late in the season. Yeah, that's more than he's thrown in all of his other seasons combined with 93. The most he had thrown before that was 44, and that was in 2017. So he's holding up with needing to throw probably about 100 innings if he goes one more start here, and maybe that bumps up to 130 or something next year. It's good to see that he kind of has handled that workload, hasn't really gotten injured outside of a line drive off his foot or something was the only injury they had this year. So good to see from him. You know, at double A, 16 strikeouts per nine in two starts, which is just crazy. Obviously, small sample. Connor Wong over the last 30 days, someone I wanted to talk about. I mentioned last week that I had gone to a game in Worcester and that he impressed me as much as anybody. Looked great behind the plate. Looked like he was, you know, kind of with his blocking and his receiving and with his throws to second, major league ready, and has proven that at the plate too. Over his last 30 days, he's hitting .366 with 5 homers and 15 RBI, and is 6-for-7 stealing bags as well. He had 2 homers in Tuesday night's game, I believe that I saw was the game tying and game winning homers in the same game, you know, 7th and 8th inning type of thing. What do you think of Wong, and, you know, do you think possible backup catcher next year? I know they could bring Plawecki back, but it might be that they're ready to hand the keys over to Wong as the backup catcher, kind of not knowing what we're going to do with starter and backup in the long term.
Yeah, this whole Connor Wong doing things very recently kind of makes me rethink, like, bringing back Plawecki and stuff like that, because I mean,
yeah,
our catching situation is a little bit in flux. I mean, I love Vasquez. But he's kind of underperformed this year, and Plawecki is just kind of like a guy. But I mean, if Connor Wong can still do this, I think that I would really like him as, you know, the backup catcher. So yeah, he's basically he's made it a discussion.
Yeah. Yeah, and with Vasquez's contract, I mean, he's 31 years old now, and I know that they have an option next year of $7 million, and that's going to be a tough decision if they think that there might be someone out there that they could platoon with Connor Wong, and they think that he's ready, or maybe they pick up, I mean, you know, $7 million is not a whole lot. They could pick that up for 1 year and see exactly what they have and how he handles a full year. And they have Hernandez as well down there at AA, who has hit for a lot more power recently. Really picked things up after I dumped on him a little bit a month or two back. So they've got a couple of catchers who have just been outstanding down the stretch at the minor league level that, you know, I think I'm kind of singing a different tune of what they have in the future at catcher. I think a couple months ago, especially before, as you said, Vasquez has underperformed a little bit, especially compared to the last 2 years, that I would have thought maybe they'd try to give him a 2 or 3 year deal, not knowing what they have. And I'm starting to rethink that a little bit. And then two other players, Tyler Dearden and Chris Murphy, we wanted to talk about as well. Shelley, where do you want to start? Do you want to start with your guy Murphy? What's going on there?
I guess we'll start with Chris Murphy because that's my dude. I love him. Yeah, it's been a bit of a rough ride since he's kind of like come up to AA. Honestly, I did not expect the Red Sox to promote him to AA, but I was really excited. But it's really been a roller coaster of a ride here.
Yeah.
Literally, it's either up or down with this guy in AA, which, again, I am totally fine with. The gains that he had made, in my opinion, the gains that he had made in high A and, quote-unquote, like, on his good starts in AA, I'm fine with. Whereas, really, he is limiting the walks, but he's still getting hit around, stuff like that. I'm okay with him kind of getting hit around in AA because it is a late season promotion, you know, a different league, whatever. But you still need to keep your eye out on Chris Murphy. The dude is had a really good year.
Yeah. Overall, 8-5, 128 strikeouts and 101 innings. But the game that we're referencing here is that he gave up 6 earned on 5 hits. In a third of an inning on Wednesday night, which isn't great because we were originally putting this together a couple days ago and talking about the 6 shutout innings with 2 hits allowed and 11 Ks the game before. But then the game before that was 5 earned in 5 innings, and the game before that was 5 earned in 4 2/3. And then before that, there was a 7 shutout innings with 1 hit allowed. So, yeah, it's been ups and downs, and you're right. It's his first go-around. We didn't even know that he was going to get promoted there to Portland this year, so it'll be good to see how he responds to that and how he does in a full year, or at least, you know, starting the year at AA next year. And then the other player, Tyler Dearden, we just wanted to give a hat tip to because he had 5 home runs last week. And if you look at the high A stats, he is tied for the high A lead in the all throughout the minors with 24 home runs. He's also tied for the RBI lead. So just an interesting player that we've brought up here and there, but just crazy stats to look at. 79 RBIs, 24 home runs, 262 average, 372 OBP, 71 runs he's played, and that's in 93 games. It's not, you know, you got to remember that these are shorter seasons that they have. 24 and 79 in a 93-game season is really impressive. So I don't know if you had anything to add to that, Shelley, but Tyler Dearden just deserved a hat tip for the outstanding season that he's had at Greenville.
Yeah, I agree. I didn't expect it, and he has performed extremely well. So, yes, hat tip to Tyler.
Yep. All right, we're going to wrap it up with a rookie ball spotlight. Shelly, I'll let you start. Who did you want to talk about this week?
Yeah, I wanted to kind of bring up Edison Polino. You know, he's playing in the Florida Complex League this year, and he is really killing it. You know, he's a 19-year-old, kind of like a second baseman, third baseman kind of guy. Basically, major league playing third base and second base. He's kind of played a little bit of shortstop, but I really do think that he's either going to be third base or second base. But, you know, he has been absolutely killing it this year. You know, he is striking out about 16% of the time, but also walking 10% of the time as a, you know, 19-year-old, which is something that you really, really want to see. He's hitting 339, 438. So he has a 162 weighted runs per gated plus. It will be interesting to see how he goes forward. You're not really seeing the power. You're seeing more of the contact. So if he, you know, transitions to second base, that's kind of like the profile that you really want to see, because you typically don't see a lot of power from someone from second base. But if you're getting all of this contact, this really elite kind of eye, this high walk rate from a 19-year-old, that's something that you really want to see. You got to keep your eye out on Edison Polino.
Yeah, I think that's a great choice. It's funny that you bring Polino up. I was talking to my pal Jared Perkins over, works with us at the Dynasty Guru the other day, and he was bringing Perkins up because we were just talking about Red Sox prospects a little bit. He was doing a mini article on the Red Sox, and he wanted to talk about Polino and mentioned, you know, the plate discipline that you talked about, and was talking a little bit, you know, if he grows into the frame, because with a lot of these guys who are down at that level, they can add some weight, some strength, and might be able to get some home run power down the line. Doesn't have any home runs, like you mentioned, but those averages are great. I mean, he was 339 at the Complex League here, so in 35 games and 25 runs, 13 RBI, 5 steal. That looks great. I am hooked in to watch Polino a little more and hopefully see some video on him in the offseason. A similar one for me was Miguel Blaze, who been wanting to bring up for a couple weeks now, but this is a good spot for it. I mean, he turned 17 at the beginning of the season back in March. They gave him a $1.5 million signing bonus. And really just watching the limited film that they have, some of the early videos that come out when they first signed Blaze, you know, he's 6'2", 170, but all the reports say, you know, he could have put 30, 35 pounds of muscle. There's just so much projection there for him as someone that was signed at 16 and is only 17 right now. And he's already putting up numbers at 17 years old, albeit in the Dominican Summer League, but he's getting it done. And I'm sure we'll move up from there next year. He's hitting 272, his on base is 346. He's got 3 homers in 27 games, which he's not, you know, that's decent. That's, you want to see a little bit of power, and he's showing a little bit of power at a small size for the moment. 15 RBI, he's got 6 bags already, 7.7 walk rate, 20% K rate, and I know that they were really excited about him sending, you know, I see 1.8, 1.5, don't know the exact number on that, but Baseball America was very high on him, called him one of the top athletes in the entire international class that they had last year. So just good to see that he's hitting the ball hard early on, and that the reports have been good. And I know I've heard elsewhere that the scouts have been really impressed by him, that, you know, even beyond the stat line, that those who have had eyes on him down in the Dominican Summer League have been very impressed. So I think he's young, he's probably 5 years away, maybe 6, who knows, when you're talking about rookie ball, and similar with Polino, but just a couple of names to think about. And, you know, we haven't talked about the rookie league levels as much as some of the other ones, and they've been playing for a couple of months now. So we want to get into that. And that's about it that we have for this week. You can reach us on Twitter. I'm at BobOsgood15. Shelly's at ShellyV_643. Shelly, anything else? Anything you want to promote or that you've written recently?
Not really.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you next week.